بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، والسلام عليكم جميعا يا أخواني وأخواتي العزيزات ورحمة الله وبركاته. عظم الله أجورنا وأجوركم، رزقنا وإياكم زيارة قبر الحسين عليه السلام وطلب ثأره مع إمام منصور قائم بالحق، ورزقنا الشفاعة منه يوم المحشر. بحثنا what we are going to discuss today is about fitna, and somehow it is related to the discussion about the freedom of expression. So you might be surprised, what has this to do with Imam Hussein and how we are going to combine that together in our today's discussion. I want you to recite loudly salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Ba'd al-hamdi wa al-thana' wa al-salati ala سيد الرسل والأنبياء من دنا فتدلى إنه حبيبنا المصطفى صلوا عليه وعلى آله النجبى.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
And welcome to another session for today's discussion that is related to al-fitna. As we know that Imam Hussein alayhi salam is an everlasting source for inspiration, today's bullet points, as I have highlighted, as you can see, how fitna is created to manipulate sincere members of a society. That's the second, first, second, and how should we stand against fitna? You may say, what has this to do with the freedom of expression? Well, there was a film once has been produced and it was screened by the internet last year, produced by a Dutch politician. And by the way, it is called Fitna. All these evil people, when they produce something bad, they call it exactly what it deserves actually to be called. Haven't you heard about satanic verses, for example? Because these are verses from Satan, so therefore it's called satanic verses. Or this book. Film. It's named actually Fitna, and it is, you know, named by the very producer itself. He named it Fitna. Now, if you ask this kind, you know, of people, why do you create these things? Well, what's the point behind that? They don't have anything to justify beyond saying it is the freedom of expression. As if freedom of expression is the only thing that they have in their life and they are, you know, about to implement it in a wise way. That's what they call it, you know, wise way. And I find a nice joke actually that has been expressed by a Christian existentialist who was a Danish philosopher. Probably some of you have heard about him. He lived during the golden age of Denmark. Have you heard about Søren Kierkegaard? Kierkegaard, that's how they write it in English, but in their language they say Kierkegaard. Now, He was a Christian, existentialist. And what is funny, he is referring to the freedom of expression in a very ironic way, saying, I quote, people demand freedom of speech, or freedom of expression, that's what we discuss nowadays. As, listen to that, as a compensation for the freedom of thought, which they seldom use. You know that? What's ironically has been highlighted by this philosopher is totally correct. And it is direct to the point. Why? People are not free to think, my dear. What about freedom of expression and freedom of speech? Are we free to think? This is my fundamental question. Or when we talk about, you know, thinking, are we really thinking? Or we just imitate and just repeat what others have said? Huh? Unfortunately, we are living in what Imam Ayatollah, the late Ayatollah Shaykh Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Sadr, living in societies that is called, or as he has described them, al-mushtama' al-fir'auni. And he has described that society, a pharaoh society, you are not even allowed to think. There is only one person who thinks. And who's that? Pharaoh himself. That's it. You are not allowed to think. You are deprived that right to think. So what can you say then? You can say whatever you want. Like that, you know, lovebird, or like, you know, that bird which, you know, just repeats whatever has been said, you know, like what they call papagoi, you know, just repeat, no more. You're not allowed to think. What about freedom of expression, freedom of thought? And I remember sometimes we had, you know, like relative discussions, or relative, we were discussing, they said, some of the, you know, our youth, they were, you know, rebellious, and they said, why we cannot say what we want? We want to say and to speak something. I said, yes, they are right. So please, our fathers, our parents, take into consideration that they have the right to say what they want. Let them be free to say what they want. But I couldn't help adding and addressing our youth generation. I said, please, before you say something, think about it. Because if you think, then you will get it all right. And if you don't think, you just speak without thinking, without reflecting about what you're saying, it would be pointless. If you think how to speak, and what to speak, and the perfect moment as to express your thoughts, then you will be successful. Then even your parents would submit themselves to you. And they say, you are right. So our brothers, our youth, our sons, our daughters, please, think and think twice before you say something. And definitely, you are entitled to say what you think. You must say what you think. Because if you are right, everybody must help. And, you know, follow what you say. And if you are right, you are wrong, you didn't get it right, they should help you, they should correct you. So you are entitled to say what you think. But please, think before you say anything. Reflect on what you are going to say. This is what is required from our youth. You may say, that's too much, we just want to speak, you know. If you just want to speak, then that would be like, you know, pointless, a futile words and sentences that wouldn't get you anywhere. Why don't you think about it and think what you are going to say, and after having reflected enough, then you can say what you want. Now, This man, I think he's one of those who just, you know, produce without thinking, or say things without thinking. Now you may say, this is something in Holland, so what has this to do with us here? We are in the United States, we are in Detroit. By the way, I found that this film has been screened as well by website here in the United States, and that website is supported by professors at the university here in Ann Arbor, in Detroit. So, don't get it wrong. These evil productions, they are going everywhere, and there are people who are supporting them, even here. And I'm going to quote here whatever has, just few words that has been quoted in that website, and what they said about their material presented in that website. I quote, that's what they said. How the Quran, he's inviting the reader, you know, everyone who's reading the internet, I quote, that's exactly what they have written. I just, you know, copied and pasted. That's it. I didn't do anything. How the Quran commands the Muslims to murder the Christians. What's more, Jews, Buddhists, Hindus, Baha'is, Druze, Ahmadiyyas, and all over non-Muslims in cold blood. What? Is this what Islam says? We have been, don't you remember we said that Imam Hussein has promoted life? He didn't ask us to die. He said live with dignity and die with honor. So where have you got this from? I don't know. You know, Muslims are being commanded to murder and, you know, kill Christian Jews, everyone, exactly everyone. Now I am asking, and that's a good question. I'm not going to start with, you know, Netherlands itself. I'm going to start with this country, actually. Is this command actually referring to the atomic nuke of Hiroshima and Nagasaki? You know, 170,000 people were killed at once, like in microseconds. Wiped out. Some of them probably were, you know, Hindus, or Christians, Jews, even sometimes Muslims, who knows? Everyone killed. Are you referring to that bombardment, nuking of Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Probably this man has got it wrong, actually. He was reading there, the history, and then he was saying, this is Quran. No! Second, I quote. Again, we just quote. We do not say anything. We just quote. Listen, Associated Press, September 13th, 2005. Melkami BV, which it's a company for, you know, chemical substance and so on, sold over 1,200 tons of dimethylamine and triodidiluyl and 20,000 kilos of phosphorus trichloride, and that's all mustards or nerve gas precursors. How much? 1,200 tons. To produce what? Mustard gas, nerve gas. Like a micro, you know, cubic milliliter of that would be, you know, enough to kill a human being. Not only a human being, probably the whole, you know, 5, 6, 10 people. 1,200 tons. later dictator, the last dictator of Iraq, Saddam Hussein. He used it indeed, didn't he? Haven't you seen that, you know, the chemical bombardment of Halabja? Haven't you seen his army using that while bombarding the Iranian army? How many of them were sent, you know, to Europe? Are they not human beings? Yeah, of course. But I don't know where were those, you know, human rights, you know, activists, what they have done. What about all these, you know, innocent Kurds who were killed, you know, massacred and killed, all of them. Of course, you know, this guy who has written this, you know, code, Quran commands to kill, you know, Muslim kill Christian Jews. Definitely some of these Kurds were Christian Jews, or some of them were, you know, well, majority of them Muslims. But the question is that where is human rights? And the one who is already obsessed with killing others is accusing Quran for being so. Isn't that funny? Therefore my question is that, are you referring to the Dutch companies such as Malcolm Holland, you guy, who supplied the former dictator of Iraq with chemical weapons? Huh? Are you referring to those causing fitna and killing each and every single innocent person in Iraq today? In the name of, you know, the extended and big, you know, Middle East, extended Middle East, huh? There was a good, actually, metaphor used by some of our Arafa and mystical scholars. They say, whenever they hear such a, you know, pompous guy speaking, accusing others, you know what they say? You know, Quran is such a pure tool. We are such a pure people, we have such a pure heart, it seems somehow we are just like a mirror, and you're looking at us, reflecting yourself, you just say what you are, because you see yourself in that mirror. So Quran is a mirror. Quran is a mirror for those people who wants to kill everyone, and they think that Quran has, you know, ordered us to do that. I don't know where he gets that from, really. Okay, let's check what Quran has said about fitna. Fine. What is actually the exact meaning of fitna? I called Quran and fight with them until there is no more mischief, or sometimes translated as disbelief, and the religion be only for Allah. قَاتِلُونَ حَتَّى لَا تَكُونَ فِتْنَ وَيَكُونَ الدِّينَ كُلُّهُ لِلَّهِ. This is from Surah Al-Baqarah, actually. Fitna, translated here as disbelief or mischief, means here ascribing a partner to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and worshipping idols. As was, I quote here, Allama Tabatabai of Al-Mizan. As was the custom of polytheists of Mecca, who compelled others to do likewise. This meaning is inferred from the next sentence, and religion be only for Allah. Why? Because Allah did say, وَقَاتِلُوهُمْ حَتَّى لَا تَكُونَ فِتْنَةً وَيَكُونُ الدِّينُ كُلُّهُ لِلَّهِ. This verse is similar to the verse and fight he is now quoting and trying to interpret Quran, comparing it with other Quranic verses. Similar to the Quranic verse, and fight with them until there is no mischief, and the religion be only for Allah, but if they desist then verily Allah sees what they do. And if they turn back, then know that Allah is your master, the most excellent master, and the most excellent helper. This is chapter 8, verses 39 to 4. Mm-hmm. Now, this verse actually shows that it is obligatory to call them to the right path. Before the war, if they accept the call, there will be no fighting. But if they reject it, then there is no master except Allah, and He is the most excellent master and the most excellent helper. He helps His believing servants. It is known that fighting is prescribed so that religion be only for Allah. Such a fighting cannot be started unless until the adversaries are first invited to come into the right path, i.e. the religion based on monotheism. Okay? Now, he has quoted actually this Quranic verse. Now I would say how he has played with this Quranic verse, or put it completely out of context. Allama Tabatabai says, I quote him again, this verse, listen to that. This verse under discussion is what we are now having, you know, referring to that. Under discussion is, as explained earlier, about the Meccan polytheists, and does not cover the people of the book who are referred to in verses like chapter 9:29. And the religion be only for Allah means that idol worship be abolished and the oneness of Allah be accepted. Why is he saying that? It's actually, he's referring that this Quranic verse was revealed when the Prophet ﷺ went to perform his Umrah. And that's when they have signed the Treaty of Hudaybiyah. And Muslims were afraid that they are not going to keep their words and their promise. And that's why this Quranic verse has been revealed after that. So it's referring to a specific type, specific group of polytheists. Those of Mecca. The people of the book do believe in one creator. Definitely. Jews, Christians, they all believe in one creator. We know their belief is in reality disbelief, as Allah has said that they do not believe in Allah, nor in the later day, nor do they prohibit what Allah and His Apostle have prohibited, nor follow the religion of truth, but Islam is content. What is content with Islam? With their mere profession of monotheism. They say we believe in one God, and that's enough for us. That's enough for us. Therefore the Prophet did not fight, for example, with the people of the Christian of Najran. He didn't fight. They called for Kurds, and he said, okay, imprecation, ready. You call your honest people, I call my honest people. And we ask Allah for to curse, this is what's called mubahala, imprecation. He didn't fight with them. They capitulated, they were willing to pay money, jizya, but there were no war at all. Why? Because we are peaceful people. We don't want to fight, we want to defend ourselves. We don't want to be humiliated. As Imam Hussein alayhi salam said, he said, we and this craze. How preposterous, how impossible is that? No, that's all what has happened. Imprecation, we call to Allah to curse those who are lying, that's all. But when that, you know, great man of Christian, when he looked at those faces, these are faces of honesty. He said, I swear by our Lord, that if the man is going to ask Allah Ta'ala to eliminate all Christians on earth, no one will remain alive after that prayer. Only because he saw Imam Ali, Hassan, Hussein, Fatima. Sallu ala Muhammad wa
Allah.
So we have seen how this film is actually ill-informed, and therefore I am now coming direct to the point, the fitna. Mm-hmm. Fitna is actually actually an Arabic word which means sedition or subversion. That's the actual, you know, literal meaning of the word. Reflects the very nature of that film, actually, of its title. Why? Because this defamatory, ill-informed little film is an Islamophobic extremist work of such negativity that can only be viewed as a concerted attempt to create a self-destructive and totally unnecessary fear in the minds of individuals living in the Netherlands in particular and in the West in general. This is actually what's all, and just, you know, to summarize of the whole film, describe it, that's the summary for describing this film. Now you may say, technically it is really well done. Is it? Well, technical evaluation of that film, I would say, the producer has not come up with any, you know, polemic material. It has neither provided genuine masterpiece of documentary. At least that guy who produced 9/11, what's his name? Michael Moore?
Michael Moore.
Yeah. So, he has come with something that he was, you know, awarded by Cannes. He has provided genuine masterpiece, but here this guy hasn't provided genuine masterpiece of a documentary, nor an innovative work, but rather has manipulated the production of a combination of materials that can be classified into three categories. I have seen the film and I have classified all what he has brought up in that film. So, let's see what are these three categories. First, lurid and scandalous tactics in the style of the gutter press. Cheap press, you know. First. Second, Quranic verses that are intentionally or unwittingly, perhaps due to ignorance, there are so many of ignorance, being misused or out of context, as we have seen this Quranic verse. Third, various acts that are condemned by Muslim jurisprudence and horrible scenes which originated from extinguished regimes previously supported by Western countries. Like some of these scenes you can see. These are condemned actually by our scholars. Now while realizing actually those people being ignorant, why then? Why are they doing that? They just attempts to weaken the roots of social stability and to distract from the rational approach promoted by affluent thinkers, responsible intellectuals and academics. Because there are some wise people here, they just don't want them to listen to them. It certainly does nothing to serve mutual understanding and everlasting peaceful coexistence between the various communities of the West, of which there has been long been a harmonious Muslim presence. So, some of them say, what's the best option then, oh dear Sheikh? I would say, actually, therefore, that there are so many people who believe that the best solution is, the wisest reaction is to this piece of hate mongering of is actually to dismiss it altogether and totally ignore it as a pathetic example of ignorance. Now, many claim that we must reveal this, you know, hypocrisy. However, the revelation of must follow the same style, adopt the same logic that Imam Hussein used when revealing the hypocrisy of the enemies of Islam. How? Muawiyah has accused, actually, Imam Hussein of causing fitna. How? He wrote a letter. Muawiyah wrote to Imam Hussein, I quote, "Be precautious and don't divide the Muslim Ummah. Don't push them into fitna as you have witnessed the level of the people and examined them properly." We can see and we can read, he accused Imam Hussein of causing fitna and advised him to refrain from doing so. Now, what Imam Hussein actually alayhi salam did, he stood against the one who accused him for causing fitna. He replied, revealing the hypocrisy of the writer of this letter, I quote, "You mentioned in your letter that I should refrain from dividing the Muslims and not to push them into fitna. Indeed," listen what he says, "indeed, I do not know greater fitna other than you becoming the leader of this ummah. أني لا أعلم فتنة أعظم من ولايتك على هذه الأمة. In fact, I don't know a duty fulfilling my consciousness, my religion, my social responsibilities need better than doing jihad against you." That was his answer to the fitna he has been accused with. And the last, actually, conclusion lesson that we can get, if you follow with me. First, do not remain in the state of apathy and pretend as though nothing has happened when the fitna is approaching. Second, if you know how to stand peacefully and in a civilized way against fitna, then stand up and reveal the ignorance, weak standpoints, Islamophobic mentality, and mental disorder behind the mastermind of this fitna. Three, so stand against fitna, creating anti-fitna, but be aware not to create another fitna. Because we've got so many problems with ignorance. When they stand against something, they create another fitna. And last point is, be like Imam Hussein alayhi salam, who stood against hypocrisy and revealed who was the real fitna. The real fitna, as he said, "إني لا أعلم فتنة شر على هذه الأمة من ولايتك عليها." You are the one. You being or becoming the leader for this ummah is actually the biggest fitna. So we have learned something as how to stand against fitna, and we have learned how these people who are creating fitna are using mass media to manipulate the masses. ادعوا معي اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم كل وليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا استغفر الله لي ولكم والحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد. Oh!